Cultivate Simple, Episode 2, Winter is Coming. Welcome to Episode 2 of the Cultivate Simple podcast. I am Brian Morris, a.k.a. Mr. Chiotes, and over here by my side is...
Susie.
My faithful sidekick. Oh. I just have to say that it was a crazy week this week for several reasons. And one was because of the overwhelming response we got to episode one of the podcast. I was very encouraged, I guess you could say.
He was excited.
All this week, I just kept saying, this is really great. People are actually listening. And some of you even commented that, you know, you listened all the way to the end, which I was amazed about as well.
Some people listened twice, I hear.
Yeah, there were some repeats. From the statistics and my rudimentary math skills, I'm thinking that we had just around 1,000 downloads or 1,000 listens. So, I mean, that's not too bad.
No.
That's
not at all.
Pretty funny that many people listened to what we had to say. Talking about ourselves, rambling on about us. So this week we're actually going to have a topic, and that's more of the plan for the podcast. We're not going to just talk about ourselves every week, although that would be fun, wouldn't it? But we want to talk this week. You know, I'm sitting here. Right before we started recording, I poured myself a glass of apple cider. We've got the parlor stove going. I think every morning this week with a fire, Dexter in there, stretched out, warming himself by the fire, and the leaves have changed up here. Most of them, we had a pretty good windstorm and a rain last week that took most of them off the trees, so we're past our peak leaves, and fall is here in full swing, and winter is coming.
Quickly.
Very quickly. And so this week we're actually going to talk about fall prep and what you need to do to get your gardens ready for what is coming.
And this is obviously more relevant to those of you that are gardening in the north, because I've pretty much always gardened in the north. So, maybe you can comment in the comment section about what you do if you live in the south. I mean, it's a little different in the south, but I mean, you still have different weather to deal with this time of year. And your tropical plants might need, you know, mulch and some of those other things that we talk about too.
So that is going to be the topic this week, is fall prep. And we're just going to jump right into it. And in the north, and I mentioned that our leaves have already fallen off, and now they're laying all over our yard. The good thing is we seem to get where our... new home is, it's on top of a hill, and we seem to get a lot of wind, and the wind seems to push all the leaves into the woods. So it's kind of nice not being surrounded by houses in a I don't know what you would call where we lived before, a subdivision.
Yeah.
And so we don't hear leaf blowers, which is great.
Which is fantastic.
Isn't it?
That has to be the most annoying sound ever.
And it was always kind of funny, though, because we would always, one of the things that we would do is whenever in our subdivision, in our community, there was a big dumpster that you could put your huge bags of garbage bags full of leaves in. And every year, you know, people would be throwing those in, and Susie and I would pull up with the car, and I would basically go dumpster diving and throw all the bags out, and then she would, you know, we would chuck them into the car.
Throw them into the car and take them home and use them.
And take them home and use them. And so that's one of the first things we want to encourage you to do, is if you do have a lot of leaves, or if you have neighbors with a lot of leaves, so many people bag them up and throw them away. And there are a lot of communities that are using them for mulch or for, I know that over in your parents' community in Rittman that they take them out and dump them on one of the farm fields, and the farmer tills them into his field.
Yeah.
Smart guy. So that's kind of what we want to talk about, is first of all, is using leaves as mulch. So why don't you talk a little bit about what we did at our last place. When we'd get those bags home, what would we do with them?
I would always take them out in the front yard. And often I would let a week or so go in between the times that I would do this so that there would be grass clippings mixed in with the leaves. I would empty the bags out and spread them out to a couple inches thick. It kind of depends on your lawnmower and how powerful it is. And then I would run over them with the lawnmower, chop them up, bag them. And then I would empty the mix of chopped leaves and grass clippings onto my garden beds. And that provides a great mulch. You really should chop up the leaves a little bit before adding them to your garden beds, because otherwise they just kind of form a really dense mat of kind of slimy leaves, and they stick together and they hold moisture. And then that, I have found that that kind of a situation provides a better host for molds and slugs and those kinds of things. But when you chop them up, and especially if you can mix them with some grass clippings or some sort of a green material as well, they break down a little more over the summer or over the winter. It also seems to encourage a little bit more of like the earthworm movement underneath. I found that to be kind of the best way to do it. I don't always have grass clippings. It kind of depends on the fall and how cold it gets and how quickly your grass quits growing. But generally, the grass keeps growing through the, you know, through November in Ohio, and then I can almost always have some grass clippings to mix in with the leaves.
Yeah, when we first moved into our house in Ohio 10 years ago, we really didn't have that much earthworm activity or just really any activity in the soil at all. And I'm sure we'll get into the soil food web at some point in the future. But yeah, it was just amazing, the change. And that was definitely due to, you know, giving them food. If you go out into the forest and you peel back that layer of leaves that falls every year, you'll just see all kinds of activity and all kinds of little creepy crawlies and, you know, thing, little critters doing their job. And it was amazing. By the time we left our house in Ohio, the amount of activity that was in the soil in the spring when those, you know, we'd peel back those leaves.
Yeah, and I would have to say that that's probably, if you have bad soil, and even if you have good soil, it's important, that's probably going to be one of the most beneficial things you can do to help improve your soil quicker than just about anything else, is to add a really good layer of mulch, especially a natural mulch. Chopped leaves is perfect. I mean, if you think about it, that's what nature does. And when you can do things as close to the way nature does, that makes nature really happy in your garden. And if you have super bad soil, consider adding a couple of amendments underneath. I won't go into detail on those here. That might be a better topic for a short ebook or something later. But depending on your soil, add some gypsum, some green sand, some you know, phosphate, some of those kind of mineral and rock powders that you can buy very inexpensively at a farm supply store. I'm sure your farm supply store can give you a great ratio of what to put on, what to mix together. It kind of depends on whether you have clay soil, sandy soil, that kind of a thing. But if you can add some of those on the soil underneath your leaf litter that you add, you'll notice within one season a huge improvement. And over the course of a couple years, I mean, it'll be remarkable. Definitely something to think about doing if you have bad soil. And even if you have good soil, it can help balance out any imbalances that you have in nutrients and all the other, you know, all of those other little things that come into play in the garden.
And another thing that you can do with leaves, something that we did in Ohio, and I'm sure we'll be doing here once we get some hydrangeas, because that's one of your favorite plants, right? Mm-hmm. And so, and I know that I was asking just for her reaction there, because I would actually buy her one for, you know, different holidays or birthdays, special events, or birthdays, that kind of thing. And so we had quite a few in Ohio.
We had 25 different varieties of hydrangeas in our garden, and in total probably about 30 or 40 different shrubs, which is a lot for a small quarter acre garden.
And with many of those, if they get a hard freeze in the winter, explain that a little bit, that they don't.
Well, different kinds of hydrangeas. Some of them bloom on old wood. Some of them bloom on new wood. Some of them bloom on both. Now, if you get one that blooms on the new wood, it doesn't necessarily matter for you to wrap it, because they'll often still bloom on the old wood, and you could, those will be frozen out in the winter, but they'll still bloom because they'll bloom on the new wood. Now, some of the older varieties of hydrangeas don't do that. They only bloom on the old wood. So if you've had a hydrangea in your garden, you know, for 5 years and it's never bloomed, you most likely should try to wrap it and protect it in the winter, and then you'll probably get blooms. I had an old shrub that was left by the previous owners that would only bloom if we had a mild winter. And I started wrapping it. I would put stakes around it, wrap burlap around those stakes, and then fill it up with oak leaves generally, because they decompose a lot slower than maple leaves and other kinds of leaves. And then once I started doing that, that plant bloomed beautifully every single year after that. So if you do have some sensitive plants like that, consider wrapping them, throwing some leaves in there. It's more, and the wind, the cold wind is often a bigger factor than the cold weather, because it's so drying. Some people also, if your hydrangeas are small, you can get some pine boughs, like say if you have a Christmas tree farm near you. A lot of times they give away those bottom branches that they cut, you know, go get a bunch of those and just kind of mound those up over your small hydrangeas. And that works well for those as well. But yeah, we use the leaves mostly for everything. And if gather as many leaves as you can in the fall. Often we would gather bags and bags and as many bags as we could get from, you know, from our garden and from the dumpster. And we would just kind of pile them in the back behind the garage, hidden a little bit, or, you know, put them in this. We had this big like wooden corral that we would pile them in and just save them, because they'll come in really handy in the spring too for mulching your new garden beds. You know, if your mulch blew off of your garlic bed in the fall, you can chop up some more leaves and add a new layer of mulch. Or when you plant all of your spring plants, you know, your broccoli and that stuff out in the garden, you can add a great layer of leaf mulch, because if you can use leaves above any other product, it's, you know, it's going to be the healthiest for your garden.
And it's free, typically.
And it's free.
And your neighbors are happy to drop their bags of leaves off in your front yard if you tell them, hey, you know, if you see somebody leaf blowing or you see somebody raking them up and they're throwing them in a bag, just stop by and say, hey, when you're done with those, can you just bring them down and, you know, tell them what you're using them for? And maybe you'll even educate them a little bit and they'll say, oh, I never thought about that, you know? And yeah, next thing you know, we're...
Next thing you know, you're fighting for leaves because everybody else wants them too.
Yeah, exactly.
Because a lot of people would ask us that, like, oh, what are you doing with all these leaves? And I'd say, oh, I'm using them as mulch, because then I don't have to buy a load of mulch in the spring. And then they just kind of look at you and all of a sudden they're like, oh, that's a great idea. I never thought of that before.
And if you do this with your neighbors, or if you just, like us, get them out of the dumpster, you might get a few surprises. We had some cactuses once, or cacti, and different things that we found, sticks and...
balloons.
Odd, weird stuff. The other, just, this is completely off topic, but another side benefit is that you get, if you're careful when you open the garbage bags up, like if they're the tie ones that have the handles and so on, you get massive amounts of free garbage bags.
Oh yeah, we've got garbage bags for the next couple of years, because you just untie them and empty out the leaves and then you have all these garbage bags, and it's kind of silly to throw them away.
And usually it's the really thick
lawn type bags.
Yeah, they're not like the kitchen type. Yeah, they're the lawn type, so they're great for the garage, you know, for actually throwing away stuff that should be thrown away, not leaves. And if you live in a community, definitely, that doesn't have like a recycle program, that the leaves go into a landfill, then, you know, maybe start something like that in your neighborhood and do some education. So anyway, moving on to the next thing. Oh, and just about the projecting the hydrangeas, I know you did a blog post about that, and so we're going to put a link to that blog post about wrapping the hydrangeas for winter into the show notes. So if you go to the Cultivate Simple podcast episode 2, I need to really come up with a better way to link that, to link to the podcast episodes. But anyway, if you go to the blog You'll see episode 2, and there'll be the link in there, along with some other notes that we're going to put in there from today's show. So the next thing to do in your fall prep is to move your pots to a sheltered place. And this actually kind of goes along with the last one. We were at an event or a gathering yesterday and started talking about figs. And in Ohio, we have 2 fig trees that we still need to bring up here to Maine. And people were just amazed that we could have figs, you know, as far north as Ohio. And we started saying, well, you know, they're basically in pots and we just take them inside in the winter. We put them down in the basement last year, put them outside this year, and they fruited really well. They had a lot of figs on them. So if you do have something like that in the ground, you can wrap those too, right?
Yeah, you can wrap certain kinds of figs. You have to get figs that are a little hardier if you live in a colder zone. Like the hardy Chicago we find is phenomenal. And that one, if you can plant it in a sheltered place up against like a brick wall or a stone wall or, you know, like a masonry wall or something like that. And then just wrap it in burlap, like bring the branches really close together, lash it up as tight as you can, wrap it in burlap, and it should fruit the next spring. That should be just enough protection for it, which is nice because figs are great.
And if you need to, like I said, like we did, then, you know, bring it into the house. And it is what she said about lashing the branches, that definitely helped us because the fig tree was very unruly. And so lashing it all together and having a couple people to carry it in, because it's typically, you know, they need to be in pretty big pots.
Right. And other pots, I also have a few things like some boxwoods in pots. And I have a couple of hydrangeas that aren't hardy enough to stay outside in our zone, but they're hardy enough that we just wheel the pots into the garage and kind of leave them in the garage. And as long as they're in a more sheltered space where they don't get quite as much cold wind, they're fine. They'll still bloom. But I think I have a couple hydrangeas that are only hardy to a zone 7, and they do just fine being wheeled in the garage. And boxwood is the same way. And you do want to bring in your pots that are clay or terracotta or any of that if you're going to keep plants in them, because if they get wet and the freezing and the thawing, it'll just kind of blow your pot apart. But if you move it into the garage, you kind of let it dry out a little bit, move it into the garage, you won't really have trouble with that. So that's another way to just protect those plants that maybe are right on the border. And then it saves you money too if you have a couple of perennials in pots instead of buying annuals every year and planting them in there. You know, a couple of boxwoods in a pot and they look great, and you just chuck them in the garage or on a covered porch, or if you have one of those basement stairwells. I was reading a book that there's one guy that just sticks all of his in a basement stairwell, so it works great for him.
And if you do have a pot that gets blown apart, don't throw it away. Just put it back out in the garden, and it makes like
little
nice little toad houses
or, you know, places for little salamanders and stuff to live under. Yeah,
we say that from experience.
Yes, we've had a couple of pots blown apart.
Which will happen. So then moving on to your actual garden beds, a lot of people don't plant anything in the fall or for a winter crop. So what are some things that that you can do to prepare those beds for next year?
I would highly encourage you. We come from Ohio, and Ohio is very traditional in the garden, like the edible garden sense. A lot of people do have little gardens out in the backyard that they grow tomatoes, beans, peppers, zucchini, that kind of stuff in the summer. But typically, like Brian's grandparents, they till it up in May or early June. They plant their stuff. Come September, they harvest everything out, and they just kind of let it be for the winter. And if you're just going to not plant anything in there, you might as well plant a cover crop or do something that's going to be beneficial to the soil. And a cover crop is going to help in a multitude of ways. It's going to give you a mulch, for one, which will hold nutrients in your soil and keep your soil from blowing away, being washed away. It stabilizes the soil. It can also improve and help balance out certain deficiencies in your soil. So I won't go into the details of each one. You can research that if you want. But, you know, if you have problems with certain diseases, you can plant certain cover crops to help mitigate those. Like mustard is fantastic, and that'll go. You can plant that one in the fall and then plant another one after it's gone. It's a short-lived kind of it's more of a cooler season, not an overwintering. Or you could plant a winter rye that'll grow over the winter and grow really well in the spring as well. A cover crop is also, let me think, what else?
Well, you said good mulch too, right?
Yeah, because it provides then in the spring, great mulch. I mean, if you don't want to plant a cover crop, throw at least minimally throw a bunch of leaves over your soil to protect it, and then that'll increase earthworm activity, and they'll break some of that down and, you know, work it into the soil. But I would highly recommend a cover crop of a winter rye. I love the fall green manure from Johnny Seeds, which is a mix of a bunch of different ones, some nitrogen fixing, some rye. One of the things I really like about rye, which you might be interested in as well, especially for an overwintering crop, is that I have read that it puts something into the soil that inhibits weed growth. And I've noticed when I've used it, it does a great job at inhibiting weeds throughout the coming season, like the next summer. So I would highly recommend, try a couple different ones. Find whichever one you like best, which one works about best for your garden. You know, I mean, you have nothing to lose but a couple dollars in seeds. And you can get small packs of cover crops from places like Johnny's Seeds. I think Fedco sells them, Peaceful Valley, Southern Exposure. There are a lot of seed places that sell cover crops. I think Seed Savers Exchange does as well. You know, and try a couple different ones and see which one you like best. I've tried probably 7 different cover crops now, and I've discovered a few new ones this fall that I'm going to try next year in the garden.
And which did you say is your favorite again?
I like the fall green manure mix from Johnny's. That's my favorite. Now, you can plant just a winter rye, which you can probably get at your local farm supply store, you know, in the area. And it's just the winter rye. But I like the mix from Johnny's because it has some field peas in it, which will grow up in the fall and help fix nitrogen. And then the nitrogen feeds the rye in the fall. And then in the spring, there's some red clover in there, which some of it seems to germinate in the fall, and then some of it germinates in the spring too. So you get the benefit of the nitrogen fixing for that, both in the fall and in the spring. And then in the spring, you'll have hairy vetch that will germinate and come up, and it kind of grows up the rye too. The rye kind of stabilizes the hairy vetch. And then I always just cut it all down with a scythe in the spring. You can cut it. You're supposed to cut it right before it starts flowering, which then the plant has kind of exhausted itself, and then you won't have trouble with the cover crop kind of growing back. Some people tell you that, or you know, get worried about the hairy vetch, or they worry that they're going to have the rye coming back in their garden as like a weed. But I haven't had any problem with that at all, as long as you cut it at the right time. So
then not only does all these things you talked about, the nitrogen fixing and everything, not only does that benefit the soil as it's growing and, you know, break up the soil and put all the roots down in there, which then becomes organic matter, but then also in the spring, you chop all that up and, you know, you could even go out and pull it up, right?
I mean, yeah, with mustard and buckwheat and those kinds of things, I usually just pull it up and then throw it down on the soil and lay it there as a mulch, because then you're growing your own mulch too, which then you don't have to buy mulch. And anytime you can close the system in your garden and not bring in, not have to buy straw or, you know, bagged mulch or any of that, you know, you're saving more money and you're increasing the biodiversity in your garden, which is another reason I like cover crops, because generally you're not going to be growing buckwheat, but buckwheat will provide hosts for different kinds of bacteria. It's anytime you can grow more and more a greater variety of plants, that's better for your garden. And so if you can grow cover crops of, you know, like mustard, anytime you harvest something, if you're not going to plant something for a month or 2 weeks, sow some mustard seed, even if it's only 4 inches tall. When you're going to plant your next crop, you can just kind of pull it up and throw it up, you know, throw it down on the soil, and it does a great job of, you know, mitigating a lot of diseases, and especially for potatoes and members of the nightshade family. So
it seems like cover crops, because you've done a lot of reading on cover crops, but it seems like that could be just like a whole series.
Oh yeah, it's fascinating to read about cover crops and all of the different the different ones, and I'm constantly reading about some. I just discovered a new one reading a book this summer that I had never heard about, and I've done a ton of reading about cover crops, and I have a bunch of books about cover crops, and it's an old cover crop, like an old heirloom one that nobody really uses anymore. So I'm really excited to buy some seeds and try it, because from what I've read, it is perfect for the small home garden. But I think because a lot of home gardeners don't employ cover crops anymore, you mostly read about the ones that are beneficial for like the big farming ventures. So yeah, it's an interesting thing to read about. I can add a couple of books in the show notes that are fascinating reads about it. And that's something that maybe we can think about doing a whole show on, or a series on the blog about later, you know, the different cover crops that might be beneficial for your particular garden. But I would start with a fall one. Try it. Why not? You know?
Yeah.
What have you got to lose?
That's what I was going to say. If you know, that was, if you need to go back and listen to that a couple times to pick up all the information that she just dropped the knowledge on you about cover crops, just go to Johnny's, get the, why can't I remember?
Fall green manure.
Fall green manure. And take it out and just chuck it on the garden.
You know, I don't do anything special. I just kind of sprinkle it on the soil and
let it go.
Sometimes I rake it a little bit, depending on how big the area is and how much space I have. You can rake it in a little bit and kind of walk over the area a little bit to make sure the seeds have good contact with the soil or not. I mean, you know, seeds are pretty good about surviving. That's what they're
that's what they're kind of made to do.
So, you know.
That's what they've been doing.
A lot of times being fussy about it just creates more problems.
That's right. So the next thing that needs to be done, we think that this ends in the summer, or that this is the worst part of summer, is weeding and pulling up all
those
weeds and going on pulling weeds and pulling weeds and pulling weeds, which, you know, again, being fussy, a lot of times we just kind of let them go depending on the weeds. But why do we need to weed in the fall?
Making sure you weed in the fall is going to be create a lot less work for yourself in the spring and in future years, because typically in the fall, if you've let your garden kind of go, the weeds are getting big and they're starting to produce seeds, or maybe they've already produced seeds, and you want to make sure you get those out of the garden, get as many weed seeds out of the garden as possible. Now that we have chickens, I'm just throwing the weeds in the chicken run, you know, and it's producing a great kind of a
almost like a mulch or a
covering, because it was just kind of mud there, so it's covering up all that mud. The chickens are just loving scratching around in it. If you don't have chickens, you can always have a special compost pile for your weeds. If you don't do an active composting where you're turning it, it's probably not going to get hot enough to kill weed seeds. And if you don't want to spend a lot of time weeding, you probably don't want to throw those weeds in there. So you can have a special pile where you just throw those over in the corner with maybe branches, twigs, all that stuff that you don't throw in your normal compost pile. And after 3 or 4 years, you can harvest that and use that compost maybe when you plant trees. And you're digging a really big hole and that compost ends up, you know, 2 feet underground. You're probably not going to have too much weed germination at that point. Some people sterilize it. I don't really worry about it. Or you could just pile it around, you know, if you have an edge area where you've got an old oak tree or something, just pile it around there and let it kind of compost down and feed that oak tree. Or just, you know, compost into the soil wherever it is. Mm-hmm. You can also, if you want to, let them dry and burn them and then throw the ash on your garden, which is really good. Just make sure you're not burning any noxious weeds like poison ivy and things like that that can that can put, you know, the poison ivy stuff into the air.
And if you don't know before, you'll probably know afterwards.
Yeah, just, you know, be careful about that. But that's another option if you want to, you know, make some biochar with it. Dig a trench, read up on biochar, and try that out. I mean, that's kind of fun. I did that 1 year just to try it and see what it was all about. So, you know, experiment.
Burning stuff is fun.
That's right. Burning stuff is fun.
Yeah.
Just keep, you know, a hose handy just in case, and don't burn when it's dry. Just be smart.
Yeah. Common sense.
That's right.
And then, so weeding, planting cover crops, moving everything in. But you can also not let all of your garden beds just sit there all winter and do nothing. So what are some different things that you can plant in the fall and then continue to harvest throughout the winter?
That's right. And it was probably 4 years ago that I read a book by Elliot Coleman called Four Season Harvest.
And if you haven't read it.
If you haven't read it, it's definitely worth, I would recommend buying it. I definitely have a copy of, I think, every book he's written in my resources that I often look through. And it was just an eye-opening read for me because I come from the Midwest where people till up their gardens in May or June, plant their garden, and then they till it up in the fall, and that's it. Nobody grows stuff like that. And so it was really eye-opening to me because that's, you know, the kind of garden I grew up being a part of and seeing. And then that same year, I bought some spinach seeds and I planted them outside in October. It was a little later than they recommended planting them, but I covered them with a piece of cheesecloth over like some little bamboo stakes that collapsed halfway through the season.
It wasn't even halfway through, but yeah.
It probably collapsed like a month later when we had our first snow. But in February, I went out there and I, you know, picked up the cloth, and there was a ton of spinach under there. So we were harvesting and eating spinach straight from the garden in February. And ever since then, I've been growing, trying to grow all different kinds of stuff. We experimented with carrots and beets. And there are certain seed houses kind of specialize in the varieties that do better, because there are some varieties of spinach that do better in the winter and some that do better in the summer. So Southern Exposure has a great selection and a great catalog about that, as does Johnny Seeds. And I think Fedco has some. I'm not super familiar with their catalogs. But yeah, in Renee's garden, I have found that I've planted all kinds of different spinaches through the winter. And the Catalina from Renee's garden comes out better than even like the giant winter spinach that's specifically bred for winter. And it's not specifically, the Catalina isn't specifically bred to be a winter hardy spinach. And I've had it survive the winter without any covering in my garden in Ohio when it's been a cold winter with lots of snow. And then in March, or, you know, late February, I'm just harvesting a bunch of spinach from these plants that I planted in the fall and just kind of left out there. And it's definitely, Elliot Coleman has two books about it now. It's definitely something to look into. And if anything, if you've got some spinach, arugula, try some carrots, try some beets. Even if you don't have seeds for the cold hardy kinds, definitely just go out and throw those in the ground and see what grows. You know, I mean, you really have nothing to lose, because all of those things can be kind of like a cover crop. If they don't necessarily fruit or grow really well in the spring, you just throw them in the compost pile or use them as mulch and try something else. But definitely try some spinach. Some spinach and some, it's called corn salad, mache, it's spelled M-A-C-H-E. That stuff is just amazing in the winter. It's like a tiny little rosette plant that it doesn't even need covered. And you can harvest it almost all winter long if you start it. So I would definitely recommend, even if you don't have a hoop house or anything, try some spinach. You might be really surprised at the fact that you're eating garden fresh produce in February.
And that, again, another show. I mean, no, we're not going to three shows a week, dear listener. No. but that's a complete another, or it could be another show. Just, you know, how to make small hoop houses. And
but, oh, yeah.
I mean,
they're so easy. I mean,
yeah, super easy.
At its easiest, you can just bend a bamboo pole over your spinach bed, mm-hmm. and then throw a white sheet over it or piece of cheesecloth if you have it. We have some of the Agrabon, which is like the spun polyester kind of stuff that you buy. That lets light through. You can get it in different weights. You can get lighter weight, heavier weight, you know.
And one of the things that Elliot Coleman is saying now is that to do sort of a hoop house, whatever size, but then do another layer of
like
agrabond,
a low layer of the real thin
right
stuff
on top,
right, like that kind of hovers over small little wire hoops right over the crop, like a double thing.
And doesn't he say for every layer it's like bumping it up a zone?
Yeah, it's yeah. If you get his, let's see, what's his newest book? The Winter Harvest Handbook, I think.
Are you trying to? Our bookshelf is about 10 feet away,
yeah.
So she's trying to use her bionic vision to see.
Yeah, which I do have really great vision, but the Winter Harvest Handbook. That one's fantastic too, and he talks about all of that. Each the Four Season Harvest is kind of older, and then the Winter Harvest Handbook is the newer one that talks a lot about what's in the previous book. But I would definitely recommend getting both of them and reading the first one first, and then reading the second one. And he has a lot of great charts in there. And if you ever come up to Maine, definitely swing by his farm. I mean, it's really, especially if you come in the fall, October. We were there in October 2 years ago, and it was remarkable the difference between seeing his garden, which looks like, I mean, it's just lush like a normal garden in the middle of the summer, and it's the first week of October, and he has, I mean, everything's just, the fields are full of all kinds of stuff that's coming mature, all kinds of stuff that's planted. It's fascinating.
So that is fall prep. Hopefully we've given you enough to keep you busy this week.
And if you do nothing else, throw some mulch on your garden,
yeah.
You know.
Go out and get
maybe
some leaves.
Maybe throw some mulch on there and spend the winter reading Elliot Coleman's books. And then you'll hit the ground running next fall and be ready.
Yeah, anything that you can add in. Don't just let the dirt sit there, you know. Yeah. Mulch it. Anything that you can add in that is going to be beneficial for next year, you know, get started next year for next year right now. So now we're going to move on to a new segment.
Yes.
Oh, and hang on a second, because I'm pretty excited about this.
And we have the perfect jingle for this segment.
And there it is, the sad tuba. Oh. And this segment is called The Fail of the Week.
Yes, because it's not all peaches and cream here at Chiots Run. We have our fair share of things that don't go quite as planned. You know,
actually,
as
the majority
the case,
of the things don't go as planned, but whatever.
As is the case when you're experimenting and trying new things, you know, but I think failure is often more beneficial than success because you learn more through it. Sometimes if you succeed, you don't know if it's because you did it right or if the stars were aligned or if, you know, everything. But often when you fail, you can figure out exactly why it failed. Try something the second, you know, again. And eventually you'll know why it's working, as opposed to maybe getting lucky the first time around and having no idea why things went well.
So we're going to share a failure, or we're going to try and pick one of our major ones every week.
Every week.
Yeah. And we have two this week, and they're, you know, you can be the judge how major they are. The first one, we mentioned last week that we had a broody hen.
And we decided that it was time to break her of her broodiness because she'd been sitting on the eggs for
a long time.
Probably
much
about a month. Much longer than she should have. So we decided we either had a faulty rooster or a faulty hen. Probably a case of both. Because she's kind of a hybrid chicken. So she's a mix between Rhode Island Red and Rhode Island White, which they pretty much have broodiness bred out of them. So they probably, I mean, I don't know, probably somebody's had one of these chickens that's raised a clutch of little chicks and everything went well. But in general, the hybrids, from what I read, aren't quite as great and, you know, don't have that innate mothering instinct still, at least not as strong. So she may have not sat on the eggs quite enough. She may have been off the nest too much. Maybe our rooster was just not quite as, you know,
virile
as he could have been. I don't know. Anyways, we weren't getting any chickens. And the other problem was the other hens were jumping in that nest and laying eggs too. So we were only getting like one egg a day because you know, some of the eggs were fresh, some of the eggs she'd been sitting on for a while. So we eventually decided it was time to break her of her broodiness, which a couple of readers had great tips of just taking the eggs. So we went in there and I grabbed her and, you know, put her outside and we gathered all the eggs, which there were probably 25 eggs she was sitting on.
Kind of.
And then the next day we went out and she was sitting in the nest. So I grabbed her and, you know, put her outside and I took all the eggs. And then I went out again that afternoon and got the other eggs that the hens had laid. And then the next morning when I went out, she wasn't broody anymore. She was out in the run with all the rest of the chickens. So I mean, I'm sure that's pretty fast. I don't know if you can normally break them that well, but yeah.
Well, like you said,
it seemed to work out pretty well.
The hybrid varieties don't have that mothering instinct. So I guess when somebody came in and said, "Hey, you're done," she said,
"She's like, oh,
okay.
Great. I want to go outside.
I'm tired of sitting around anyway."
Inside.
Yeah, that was our one fail of the week, and we're kind of discussing and deciding what we're going to do as far as the chickens are concerned, because they are all getting close to 2 years old, and we're out of how many we have 10
right? We have 10 right now,
ten
and we're
hens,
getting
and we're
three
getting
eggs,
three
a,
eggs
day.
A day,
although it is fall and I think right. they're starting to molt because there are a lot of feathers out in the coop and in the run, so I mean, and they quit laying or lay a lot less at that point, so right.
So that, but that, I guess talking about the chickens is, you know, a whole show once we figure out exactly what we're doing, but that actually leads to fail number two of the week, which the fail isn't so bad, but actually, you know, there's a huge benefit from it for you, the listener. So that's good. And I don't like calling people listeners because, I mean, after 56 comments or whatever, everybody's participating. So we need to figure out a better word for that. If you have a word that you'd like to suggest that we call you our friends, then let us know. Anyway, fail number two is when you move and you have two addresses and you have Amazon Prime set up, you know, so this whole one click, it's all convenient to buy stuff.
And you get your books a day or 2 days later.
In
Ohio.
The wrong state.
When you live in Maine.
Especially when it's a book on raising chickens that
you really want to read.
Really needing
that next
needing
day.
To read the next day. So, short story long, we have two copies of this book,
and which is fabulous.
One of the readers had suggested that one of the things we could do on the podcast every week, or one of the listeners suggested that one of the things we could do on the podcast would be to do a book review, because Susie, as I mentioned on the podcast last week, she plows through books. There's always about 10 books sitting on our coffee table, and she just mows through them. So this was a good suggestion because she always has books. She's always reading them and, you know, putting them on the blog. So this week we're going to start the book of the week. And I don't have a jingle for that. So how about... cheering because they're happy about the book of the week. All right. So what's the book of the week this week?
The book of the week this week is called or titled The Small Scale Poultry Flock, An All-Natural Approach to Raising Chickens and Other Fowl for Home and Market Growers. And I saw this book, I spotted it at a store, I think, or when we were out. And I said, well, that one looks interesting. And I always, whenever I see a book that I like or I think might be interesting, I usually come home and read the Amazon reviews because those are usually pretty spot on. You can, you know, if a book gets 3.5 to 5 stars, I can generally tell that I'm going to like the book.
You always have to throw out the one guy that's like,
that's like, I got this book and I thought it was about dogs.
Cars.
Yeah. So you always throw out the, you know, the lowest common denominator and some of the highest ones that are like the author's friends. But this book I would definitely rate as a buy. If you have chickens or are planning on getting chickens or want to have chickens, so far I'm about halfway through this book right now. I'm reading it kind of slowly and, you know, rereading some sections. It's really, really phenomenal. I mean, fantastic. I've read tons of books about chickens, and a lot of them I find to be kind of fluffy and cute. They have great styling, great pictures, great, you know, I mean, the books are laid out really well. They're artistic, they're nice, and they're pretty.
But there's no information.
But there's not a ton of information besides like the general generic information. But this book, I mean, it's great. It has nice pictures, but it's really, really informative. I mean, it's like an encyclopedia for having chickens. And he does some ducks and some geese as well. Doesn't go into pigeons and pheasants and those kinds of things. But those are a little more, you know, fringe as far as poultry is concerned. But I would definitely, I mean, I would rate this book as a buy for sure. It's worth the, I don't know, $25, I think, that it costs. It's really, really, really phenomenal. And he talks a lot in here about what I'm really interested in learning is raising your chickens a little differently than most people. So not having chickens and having them sitting out, you know, having a coop and having a run and buying your chicken feed at the local farm supply store. And then, you know, you feed your chickens, chicken feed and maybe some garden scraps and you kind of leave them in the run. he talks a lot about all of the interesting kind of more of a permaculture kind of an approach where you do the deep litter bedding and you have a worm bin that you throw scraps in, and then you feed the worms to your chickens, and then you employ your chickens as, you know, helpful garden tools to till in your cover crops that you planted over the winter. I mean, and kind of integrating them into your garden as part of the whole process, so you can get them working for you. You can grow some of the food for them, you know, and not be feeding them essentially, you know, chicken McDonald's, which is kind of what, I mean, you know, the stuff you buy at the store, the chicken kibble, it's just like pet kibble and all of that stuff, you know, and processed food for humans. That's not going to create the healthiest flock of chickens. And he talks in this book about, he has a couple of things, some things in there about other chicken owners, you know, like the stories from other chicken owners. And it's interesting the stories that they tell about how much more productive and how healthier their chickens are because they aren't feeding them the status quo chicken food. You know, they lay more eggs. They lay more eggs throughout the winter. They lay more eggs over a longer period of time. So you don't have to write off hens at 2 years of age because they slow down and stop laying. They'll continue to lay. I mean, he said one lady in here had a chicken that was 6 years old that was outlaying even in the winter her one-year-old chickens. So, I mean, it's fascinating to read about that kind of thing, and definitely something we want to employ more of here at Chiot's Run. So if you're interested in chickens, and especially if you're interested in a more all-natural approach to your chickens, I would definitely buy this book. It's really fantastic.
And you talked about, you know, using the chickens as tools, and I haven't read the book yet, but I thought it was interesting that the foreword was written by Joel Salatin.
Yeah.
And his big thing is, you know, let the animal be the animal and do what the animal's going to do.
Right.
And chickens go out there and scratch and,
right,
you know, eat seeds and different things. So let them do that where you want them to do that. Whether, you know, we talked about using our chickens in the garden to, you know, till it up, to scratch it up,
right,
and prepare the soil for us, because that's what they do. That's what they want to do.
He also recommends certain breeds of chickens that do better at that, because, you know, some of the newer hybrid chickens, that the foraging instinct has kind of been bred out of them because they're bred to sit in a
box
eat and lay eggs. And so, you know, he has some great recommendations for breeds that he's had experience raising, and, you know, some that forage better than others. You know, if you want to raise chicks, some that go broody better than others and do a better job of raising the chicks. So, yeah, I mean, it's definitely very involved and very informative. And it pretty much, you know, it's probably the only book about poultry and chickens you'll ever need to buy if you do buy this book.
And so our fail becomes your gain. Because now that we have two copies of this book, one sitting in Ohio and one sitting here on our coffee table, we're going to give away our extra copy. So this is how we're going to do it. We're going to have a
podcast-only giveaway.
Yeah, podcast-only giveaway. And because of that, we need to use a secret code. So, if you would like to get a copy of this book for free, then what we want you to do is to comment on this episode of the podcast. But within your comment, we want you to use the word chicken or some derivative. Chick or
chook,
whatever.
Or
hen.
Poulet.
Yeah. Something.
Whatever.
But
gallina.
But you can't say, I want a copy of the book Chicken or the chicken book or something. It has to be secret.
Okay? And we will choose the most creative.
Yeah.
It's not going to be a random thing, because this is our blog and we're giving away the book, so we can do whatever we want.
So it's going to be the
we're going to choose the most creative. The
most creative comment that somehow involves the word chicken or a derivative of the word chicken. Yeah. So we're going to see how that works out. That may be
Maybe our fail next week.
The fail of the week was our giveaway last week. And we will announce the winner of the book next week. And next week, it's interesting because we're actually going to be in Ohio. We have some work that we need to do, so we're traveling back to Ohio. And so we'll be able to have the book and ship it out to the winner. So,
and a side note. I'll mention it here and we can mention it again later.
Okay.
If you are going to buy this book, there will be a link in the show notes or any of the other books, Elliot Coleman. We would highly appreciate it if you would click through the Amazon link on my blog, because if you're buying anything from Amazon, whether it's one of these books or anything at all, or, you know, diapers, if you click through the link on the blog, then, you know, they give me a few pennies on your order. And that's a great way to support this blog and this podcast and kind of help us pay the ever increasing bills associated with it.
And it's not that you get charged extra.
No.
It's just that we get a very, very small percentage of the purchase.
Right.
Just since we referred you. So, yeah, it doesn't cost you anything, and it helps us out. And we will mention that later. So we're going to move on to listener questions.
To listen to the message again, press 1.
What do you think of the jingles? I don't know.
I wish I could hear the jingles, but
I'm sorry. I should get you a pair of headphones, too. That one was like voicemail or something. I don't know. Anyway, we're going to go on to listener questions. And actually, the first listener question is from Melissa. And this one's for you, Suze. She said, what kind of ducklings did you trade for? We mentioned last week that we might possibly be trading for some...
We're trading some maple syrup for some ducklings.
Yeah, for some ducklings. And that is when we go back to Ohio next week.
We'll be picking up 8 Muscovy ducklings.
Okay.
From a friend in Ohio. She's a blog reader and someone we've known for quite a while.
Yeah.
Happens to raise them and love them. And her, you know, her ducks just hatched out a bunch of cute little ducklings. So, yeah.
But she has... A lot.
She has a lot. She's had a couple batches of ducklings this summer so far. And so she has a bunch of them because of the drought in Ohio, the severe drought. They're not able to keep them all. And they've been having trouble with their ducks crossing the street, the main route that they live on. And they've lost a couple of ducks, you know, via accidents with cars. So they're trying to make their flock a little smaller so that they can support it a little easier on their farm over the winter. Okay. So we'll be getting some ducklings.
Yeah,
and we'll be bringing them back to Maine in the car. So
yeah.
I wonder if we can buy thunder shirts for ducklings.
Little thunder shirt. We'll see. Melissa said actually that she raises Muscovies and that they're very self-sufficient. And she says that you're going to love ducks so easy.
Yeah, that's what my friend Beth said too. She said ducks are just really great and really self-sufficient. We're going to build them a little house because they're going to be pretty young. And we're going to get like a poultry net, an electric poultry net, which we're going to use for our chickens as well. But she said it's good to kind of keep them contained a little bit so that they, you know, realize that this is their new home. This is their place. So, and to protect them a little bit from predators, because we do have a lot of predators around here. But
as our rooster found out.
Yeah, as Sean Connery found out. Yes. So hopefully in the spring they'll be running around and we'll probably keep a couple as a, you know, a drake and 2 females and maybe see if they produce more ducklings for us around here, because we'd like to have some ducks.
And why not?
That's right. And I'd like to get some runner ducks next year, too, which they do better at laying eggs, because I like to use duck eggs in cooking, so definitely get some of those, too.
Melissa also asked, I had mentioned last week about listening to a lot of podcasts, and I mentioned listen to podcasts about raising meat rabbits, and she said, what meat rabbit podcasts do you listen to? We raise meat rabbits, and I'd love to learn some more about it. And there's really one guy who's making the rounds, and his name is Rick Warden, and his rabbitry is called Rise and Shine Rabbitry. Rise and Shine Rabbitry. And if you search for that on Facebook, you'll find him, and you definitely want to like his page, because he is constantly putting out great information on Facebook. That's sort of his main communication tool. He also has a blog on his website, and again, if you just do a Google search for Rise and Shine Rabbitry, you'll find him. The really cool thing is that he's a Mainer.
He's a fellow Mainer.
So yeah, he lives about 2 hours from us. We actually drove almost by his house when we went to the fair last week, and I've been in contact with him, and we're going to go down and visit him at some point, and
hopefully November.
Yeah, and do a podcast with him, do an interview with him on starting a rabbitry, because that's another thing that we would like to do, either this winter, or maybe probably wait till next spring when we have some more time to build, because I'd like to build a little shelter, a little another little lean-to off our barn to house them in. But I don't know, that it's all kind of in the talking stages right now, or not even to the planning stages yet. But the cool thing about Rick is that he raises, he tries to raise mainly heritage breeds. He is really knowledgeable about raising rabbits, and he tries to do it as naturally as possible. He raises a lot of his own food for them in the winter so that he doesn't have to buy the store-bought food. He does supplement with store-bought food. If you listen to the podcast that he's been on, then you'll definitely hear a lot of this information. So I'll kind of stop there instead of rambling on. But the different podcasts that he's been on, if you search for these in iTunes, you'll find them. And I recommend subscribing to the first two and to the third. The Self-Sufficient Gardener is the first one, and the episodes that he was on that were episode 147 and 172. And I think you actually have to go to the Self-Sufficient Gardener's website to get that episode 147, where Rick was on there talking about his rabbitry. The second one is The Human Path, and he was on three episodes on that one. Episode 100, 116, and 117. And the neat thing about that podcast is they really focused on herbs to use for your rabbits for certain problems, whether it be a sickness or whether just to supplement with herbs to keep their health up, to keep, you know, immune system boosting and that sort of thing. So those would be three great episodes, Melissa, to listen to. And then the third podcast is called The Rabbit Podcast. Now, this one started out a while ago, and they haven't recorded an episode in a while, but I subscribed to them in iTunes, and if they ever put one out. And last I heard, Rick was actually going to be a co-host on this podcast. So if that happens, which I hope it does, because he is a wealth of information. I'm excited to go down and meet him. I'm excited that we can do a podcast with him and talk about setting up our rabbitry and what you need to do to get that started. So,
and we may have future great new and interesting plans involving him as well.
Yeah.
Which we'll just mention and throw out there to make you wonder what might be going on in the future.
What is going on?
Stay tuned, because
run. Yeah. Because we have all
exciting,
kinds of
exciting things are in the works.
We have all kinds of ideas.
We always have grand plans. So,
and soon we're going to have actually time to do some of those grand plans. The second listener question or listener feedback was from Randy. And, man, we should probably skip this one because this is really...
No, I think we can do a little bit and then maybe talk about it. Maybe we can do a whole podcast about it or do...
Yeah, because I mean, this...
some sort of a special feature on the blog, or yeah, we can incorporate this because I'm sure a lot of people.
Let me read it. Then let me read it. You're awful talkative this week. What happened?
I don't know.
It only took one episode, folks, to break her in. Randy asked, "I'm interested in reading more about your 10-year plan. Have you ever thought about posting a framework, not your specific plan, that your readers can use as inspiration?" Last week on the first episode, I said that we had a 10-year plan, and 2 years into it, we completely took a left turn and moved to Maine. And so he just wanted to know more about our 10-year plan.
Which our 10-year plan was kind of not necessarily.
It wasn't like a business plan. We didn't have a mission statement. And,
no, it was kind of a general plan. But, you know, our plan was to be kind of where we are now. In 8 years.
Yeah, in another 8 years. So let me take a step back and just tell very briefly what it was. We lived in our previous home for 10 years, and the whole time we lived there, whenever we would do an upgrade to the house or we would change something or we would do something to the gardens even, we'd always say, well, let's do it this way so that whenever we sell the house, whenever we move on to the next place, you know, to the place we really want, you know, it'll be good for resale value, that it won't be, it won't have too much of our stamp on it. And I personally sort of got tired of always thinking about next, you know, the future, because it always felt like we weren't settled in the place that we were at. So finally, about 3 years ago now, I said, we need to come up with a 10-year plan. We are going to stay here and this is funny looking back on it, and Randy, this is why you shouldn't follow our framework, or maybe you should.
I think it was just last year that you said that.
No, it was when we came up with the 10-year plan. So anyway, as I recollect, I said, we're going to stay here for 10 years. And that's when we started buying, or that's when we bought the lots on either side of us to expand the gardens, to have more room to grow things. And, you know, just started sort of doing things to the house that we wanted to do. Nothing major, nothing crazy, but just making decisions for ourselves rather than for the people that were going to buy the house next. And then, as I said, you know, and it was, you know, more detailed than that. But it was, like Susie said, it was a general idea rather than here's A, B, and C that we're going to do. And, you know, 2 years later, here we are. But this, our place in Maine here that we have now, this was the goal after the 10-year
right,
plan.
That we were going to be saving for 10 years because we've always been kind of a stay out of debt kind of people. So, you know, we had plans to save X amount of dollars and, you know, had like a kind of a number in mind that we thought it might cost for, you know, what we wanted. We wanted about 100 acres somewhere.
And then, yeah, we just got to the point, and I mentioned this in the show last week, where we sort of said, why are we putting this effort and this energy into this place that we really don't plan on staying at the end of 10 years? And that's when we decided we need to get to the place where we want to be.
Right, to kind of jump ahead a little bit.
Yeah. And then, and now, you know, we can put that money and that effort and that energy into this place where we're going to stay for the rest of our lives.
Right. And we have plans to spend the winter kind of coming up with a master plan for this place, you know, like a master garden plan kind of, and look into, you know, what we want to implement this coming year, a year after that, right, in 3 years, you know, and talk about, do we want to get a cow? I don't know. Maybe. Mm-hmm. It'd be kind of interesting. We're not doing it this coming year because that would be a little crazy. You know, we'll get some more chickens and kind of do that first. But, you know, in this winter, we'll probably sit down and really try to come up with a more exhaustive plan for the next 10 years now of what we want to do here. Because in 10 years, I mean, that plan would kind of be in full force at that point. So, and that might be something that we can somehow come up with a way of
sharing
well,
I mean,
it, having
I'm sure
a special place
it.
On the blog, or, yeah, you know, so, I mean, we can come up with a way to kind of throw that out there. And so you right. can see what our plans are, what we have what we might do, offer any advice or, you know.
So Randy, stay tuned, because
so we kind of wipe the slate clean and
we're
starting
over.
All over on our 10-year plan.
Yeah. And that includes, you know, the inside of the house, the gardens, everything. I mean, and the thing with us too is that we're very fluid, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
You know, always coming up with ideas, always changing. And so that 10-year plan is going to be very, very flexible. And it has to be, you know,
right,
because you never know. You never
exactly.
know what tomorrow is going to bring, as we found out this week. And so we switched to Around the Run. I don't really have a jingle for this. How about... that really doesn't make any sense. Okay.
We need the Beach Boys song.
Oh. But then
we'd
be
not public
violating
domain,
all kinds of copyright.
They'd throw us in jail.
Yeah. Why don't you sing it? And then
That's still illegal.
Is it? Oh, yeah. Public performance.
Yeah.
Well. Around the Run. There. They can't copyright that. Take that from me.
We need to have Dexter do it for us.
Yeah. So we're just going to run through a little bit of what happened this week, and we're going to do this, you know, fairly quickly. We don't want to go too deep and bore you with what we're doing. But this week was crazy. We did all kinds of stuff. We got invited to things. It was crazy. We didn't really spend a lot of time in the gardens this week because we spent a lot of time sort of exploring the area.
Right, and I spent time weeding, so...
Yeah, we've only been up here for 2 weeks, and we're still sort of figuring out where everything is,
where we're going to get this and that, and
where, you know, the nearest library is, because obviously we need a library, which we've sort of landed on one small town out by the coast that has pretty much everything we need, a nice little co-op where we can get different things, a nice library that we've already started requesting books from. And so that's what we did this week, was a lot of driving and sort of seeing what's around here. So yeah, but you did spend the time weeding and taking care of the chickens. We took care of Mrs. Broody Hen and broke her of that. One thing we need to do is we really need to mow.
Yeah, the grass is crazy long here.
I don't think the grass has been mowed for, what, do you think a couple months?
I don't know how long.
And it's not that we care about a manicured lawn, no. But it's just long.
It's getting a little thick and long.
Which the good thing is,
and I like to mow, and yeah, I use the grass clippings as mulch,
as we talked about earlier.
Yeah. So I mean, we left both of our mowers in Ohio, however, because we just didn't have space, and we were too tired to try to fit it in the moving truck. So we're gonna bring it up when we come back, and
hopefully
in a week or two, and then I'll start mowing and using all the grass clippings as mulch here and there around all the garden beds and stuff.
Another thing we did this week, which you blogged about, was visiting Fedco and Johnny's Select Seeds. So anything fun there, or pretty much
I've never really purchased much from Fedco. I've known about them, but I mean, every year I try to buy from one or two new small seed houses. There are just so many great heirloom seed houses out there. You know, you kind of pick your favorites and you order from them. I get a lot of stuff from Renee's Garden, Southern Exposure, Seed Savers Exchange, Johnny's. You know, I have a bunch of places that I order from, and every year I try to order from a new place. I picked up a catalog at Fedco, though. They seem to have a great selection of heirloom trees and interesting plants and that kind of stuff. So in the spring, I'll probably definitely be ordering some fruit trees from them. We also stopped by Johnny's and chatted with the lady there at their like distribution center, where if you order, you can go pick up your order here if you live close enough. And then we went out to their research farm, which was interesting because they were, it was pretty much the end of the season, so a lot of the crops were done, but they were planting cover crops in all the beds, of course, you know, and probably researching new kinds of cover crops and different kinds of cover crop combinations. I noticed one of rye and probably an oilseed radish or a daikon radish or something like that. I'm not sure what kind of a radish it was. I didn't go pull one up. It was still pretty small, but which I thought was a great combination. I think that would be really great, and I might try to implement that. I did plant some oilseed radishes just a couple weeks ago in a section of the big garden here. So, and I'll be planting some rye as well, but I think that that's a really great combination. So, and that was really fascinating to see. I'm excited to go back there a couple times next spring, next summer, and next fall, and kind of see how they do things and what they're doing there. So, and when we went to Fedco, we also met
That wasn't
Don't
subtle.
Mind Brian.
Sorry, I had
he was
to
trying
run.
To sneak back in with a bag of apples, and sneaking didn't happen.
One of the times we came up to the house here, and we were talking to the previous owner, whose name is John, and John told us about John.
Another John.
Out in front of the house here, we have two apple trees that were from the original homestead. And the previous owner, John, said that he thinks they're probably over 100 years old. And judging by the base, the size of these apple trees, the trunk, I would agree. They are huge. And so John told us about John Bunker, who is known as the apple man around here.
Like the main heirloom apple guy.
Yeah, he knows, he can identify by sight, I heard, you know, over 200 varieties that are grown here in Maine of apples. And I love apples. I've always been fascinated with them. I love the different flavors and different kinds. And so, you know, I was super excited to meet him at Fedco. And then because we had that connection with John, the previous owner, we got invited to a super secret clandestine farmer's market at John Bunker's house.
Yeah, which happens like twice a year from what we hear. And it's like a potluck. You bring a you bring a dish and there are a couple people there selling some stuff and you just kind of hang out and
so we got to
tour the place, look at the gardens and that kind
of
thing.
Which he has, you know, orchards being the apple guy.
Apple
he has
guy,
just tons of orchards there, and we got to meet his intern his apprentice, I think, is his official title, that's staying there with him, Daniel, and great guy. Got to talk with him, and so we're super excited to know him, and you know, he gave us all of his information and wants to get together with us, and I'm excited because
talk heirloom apples.
So what I snuck off and then was not so subtle and coming crashing back in, and let me make some noise here. Oh boy. Oh, the bag.
You're
going to
rip your bag.
Oh, hang on. Okay, I just ripped it off. So I just wanted to run through a couple different kinds that we picked up at his house.
And
I just
now this first variety, I've been wanting to procure a tree from for years.
Which is
Cox's Orange Pippin. Yeah. Which I've read a lot about, and I was planning on buying a couple trees of it, you know, back whenever we ended up landing and having the space to have some apple trees.
So that was...
So it was kind of exciting to get to try one of those apples.
Mm-hmm. And we also got Wagner, McCown, Snow, Pumpkin Sweet, Smokehouse, and Sweet Red, which are all heirloom, you know, varieties. And we've only tried two of them, the Smokehouse and the...
Cox's Orange Pippin.
Both of them were excellent and completely different, which is just what I love about apples. And there was a professor there from a local university that was talking about different things. It was just, you know, different conversations you pick up on. And it was neat because he was talking about the sort of renaissance of... people growing actual cider apples, and how the apples that are used in most cider today aren't cider apples. They're just regular apples that get pressed. And so a lot of people here in Maine and other places, he said, especially in England, are growing specific varieties of cider apples and getting back into, you know, it's almost like wine, where very specific, you know, type of apple, type of soil, different things. So yeah, it was just it was really cool. It was a great day. Of course, you know, we say because that's how John said, he said it was the clandestine farmer's market.
Yeah.
And we kind of laughed at that. But the, you know, now we've announced it to the world. So I guess
it's not.
Of course, nobody knows where it is. So we won't say anymore. But John Bunker does have a book. And I believe if you Google him, you can find information about him. So what else did we do? Got some weeding done. Oh yeah. One thing I did this week, which goes along with the blog, because last week we talked about the pronunciation of Chiotes and how we pronounce it, and we say Chiotes, which, you know, that's not how it's spelled. It could, because
no.
If you spelled it Chiotes, it would be C H I O A T S, which it's not. It's C H I O. Or C-H...
I-O-T-S-R-U-N.
Yeah, C-H-I-O-T-S is the regular one. So, what I did was I went and registered Chiotes Run. So now, if you're out, you know, telling your friends about it, just say Chiotes the way that it sounds, Chiotes.com, and that'll take them to the blog.
Right. Or you can tell them cultivatesimple.com.
Yeah, cultivatesimple.com.
Up here,
yep,
at the blog.
Which also comes in. And actually, I'm going to set that up probably this week to forward straight to the podcast page. So if you want people to listen to the show, you can tell them to go to cultivatesimple.com or search for us on iTunes, because we're now on iTunes, which is great. I had to publish the first podcast in order to get us on iTunes. And so after the show went live last week, I did that. And so now we're on iTunes. And speaking of the blog and of everything that goes on at the blog, this past week was crazy on the blog, because not only did we launch the show, Susie did two giveaways.
And giveaways always bring people out of the woodwork.
Yeah, and it was a giveaway that was promoted on other blogs, and it's up over 250 comments right now. Plus, you know, all of the you guys coming in and the normal comments that happen during the week, you know, 10 to 15 per post. So basically what I'm trying to say is we tried to melt the web server this week. We tried to see if it would, you know, bubble into a piling glob of goo. But we kept it up. We kept it running. But Susie mentioned earlier in the show, and I just want to mention it again, that there are different ways that you can support the blog. People have asked us about this in the past, and so we just wanted to kind of start putting these out there a little bit more forefront, because one of your goals from the beginning has been to not have ads on the blog.
Right, because they're kind of annoying.
Because I know it drives you nuts when you go to a blog and there's, you know, flashing ads
everywhere,
dancing people, and
there's nothing that drives you more crazy than paying for a magazine subscription and then it's, you feel like it's all ads and there aren't even any articles in there, you know, and you think, well, I'm paying for this. Why are there ads? If there are this many ads, it should be free.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no information. It's all ads.
Yeah.
So what we're going to do is we're actually going to set up a support page on the blog, and that the address of that is going to be chiotesrun.com/support. Oddly enough. And there's just going to be different ways that you can help to support the show on there. One of the ways is what we talked about earlier with the Amazon affiliate links. And the best way to do that, actually, if you take the link that'll be on that page, and if you use, you know, Internet Explorer or Chrome or Firefox as your web browser, you can bookmark that link as Amazon.com. So every time you go to Amazon.com, just use that bookmark, and there's a little code at the end of that that link that is our affiliate code, and that points back to us. And then, like we said, it doesn't cost you any more. It doesn't cost you a penny, but we get a few pennies out of it, but those pennies add up. So if all of you listening to this would use that affiliate link, that would help us out greatly, because right now the web hosting bill is at $80 a month,
right.
and
teetering on the edge of needing to be higher.
Yeah, because I was looking at the stats every month. I mean, that we are so excited about the success of the blog, and it's good problems, definitely. But every month I have to bump up the bandwidth, and I think with putting out 4 episodes of the podcast, along with just the regular blog traffic, we're probably going to be pulling about 300 gigabytes of data a month, which is just a ton of bandwidth. So at any rate, if you can help us out, just chopping through the affiliate link, or there's going to be some other things on that page.
Some other affiliates like Mountain Rose Herbs, you know, I've always shopped, bought my stuff through them. So if you just click through there when you buy something from them, I also get, you know, a small percentage of your order. And all of these are companies that I've been doing business with for a long time.
Yeah.
Companies that I like. I'm not going to be, you know, throwing up people up there of products that I don't spend my own money on. You know, I've got a couple of other companies that, you know, companies contact me about that all the time. Usually I turn them down unless it's a company that I already buy their stuff, or I want to buy their stuff, or, you know, there's another couple that might be in the works here. But yeah.
Yeah, and we're going to continue to expand that and to come up with new ideas. And if you have any ideas for how, you know, how to support the show, then or how to support the blog and the show, I mean, because this is, you know, an extension of that, that would be great. Because Susie does just spend a ton of time on it and loves doing it. But yeah. So next, or to finish it out, just a couple different ways, and I didn't mention this last week and kind of kicked myself afterwards, but just a couple other ways that you can connect. I know that a lot of you come to the blog every single day. You, you know, read every morning. It's part of your routine, and that's awesome. But there is other information out there. There's other places to find Susie on the interwebs. and a lot of these, most of these places you can find through the blog, and maybe you just didn't realize.
Over on the left-hand side,
the left-hand side, if you hover over the
little buttons over there,
there's actually a link over there to subscribe to the podcast in iTunes. If you've never done that before, you just click on that. It takes you to iTunes, and if you have an iPhone or an iPod, it'll load it right up every week, and you'll have the show ready to go. The other way to connect is through Susie's other blog, Eat Outside the Bag, which she doesn't write.
Which I haven't written on a ton recently because we've been kind of busy. But, you know, I'm going to get that here fairly quickly. I'm going to start trying to, I have tons of recipes to post on there that I've promised people I'm going to post. So that's kind of the food, all about the food over there.
Taking all the things that you see on Chio Turen that she's grown and turning it into meals.
That's right.
And usually simple meals too, because that's, you know, well, that's the way you cook. You're not a very fussy cook either. So, if you have any questions or comments that you don't necessarily want to put in the comments section, or if you have any, you know, recommendations that you want to throw at us, but again, you know, don't want to put it out there for the public, you can actually email show@cultivatesimple.com, and that will come to us, and we'll respond to that. Please don't spam us. You know, we use Gmail, so it kind of filters that out anyway. Another way that you can connect is on Facebook. If you go to facebook.com/chiotesrun, and that is without the A. See, now that's going to mess us up. Maybe I'll set up some sort of a short link that we could do chiotesrun/Facebook, and then it'll flip that around. Anyway, if you go to chiotesrun, or if you just search for chiotesrun on Facebook, like the page over there. Susie's always posting during the week, and that's stuff that doesn't necessarily make it onto the blog. So that's another good way to
new and exciting information.
Yeah, see information.
Lots
also
of links. I post links, interesting articles that I find there. You know, on fascinating things like cover crops and other fun stuff too, like pictures of the cats when they're doing funny things.
Typical Facebook stuff: pictures of cats, and, you know, food and. But she will never wish the internet good night. So, yeah. And another thing, a lot of people comment on your photos on the blog and how great they are. And they are great. And it's kind of amazing how they've evolved over the past 4 years. It's fun to go back and look at some of those early blog
kinda
posts.
Cringe.
Yeah. When people were like, wow, what kind of camera are you using? And it was a $150.
A Sony PowerShot?
Yeah, Sony CyberShot or something. Yeah. With, you know, it's like, here, hit the macro lens button, which it's not even a macro lens. It's, anyway. But if you go to Flickr, flickr.com/photos/chiotesrun, you can see all of Susie's, well, not all, but you post a ton
of
photos.
I post a lot. A lot of stuff that never makes it on the blog ends up on Flickr.
Mm-hmm. And finally, the two other places, Pinterest, if you're on Pinterest, pinterest.com/chiotesrun, and Twitter, if you're on the Twitters.
The tweeters.
Then twitter.com/chiotesrun. It's pretty easy to find. If you just do the name of the site and /chiotesrun, you'll probably find it. But again, links to all those are in the left-hand side of the blog. So just go to the blog and you can find all those. So,
with that being said,
that was show number two.
It's time for coffee.
It is an hour past time for coffee, and the coffee maker is probably hot. So that was an hour and 23 minutes this time.
People are going to be bored.
Which actually I need to edit out a little bit in there because we had a little bit of a glitch. But so yeah. So nobody's listening at this point, definitely. But make sure, you know, if you are still listening, remember, you know, we're doing the giveaway for the book. Go over and comment. That's going to end next week. If you're listening to this in the future, then just go buy the book at Amazon through our affiliate link. That would be great. And we look forward to talking with you next week. We don't know what the topic is going to be yet, but I'm sure it's going to be fun. And we're going to be in Ohio, so maybe we can do an interview with your mom or something. It'll be fun. So whatever you're doing this week, whether planting a cover crop or supporting the blog through visiting our Amazon affiliate links, just make sure you do one thing, and that's cultivate simple.